Real quick, before I start the show today, I wanted to let you know that I now have a YouTube channel, and I'm going to have new episodes of the show up on the channel, as well as some short little clips here and there. You can find that at fairlyimportant.com/YouTube, or you can just go to YouTube and type in the words fairly important. I'll be sure to have a link in the show notes. Okay, on to the show. Hey, thanks so much for joining me today. You may have seen in the title that some very young children are being radicalized. And no, they're not being radicalized by Islamic terrorists, though I'm sure that's happening around the world. They're not being radicalized by some crazy cult. Well, actually, now that I think about it, maybe this could be considered a cult. They are being radicalized and indoctrinated by their school systems, their public school systems. And I'm going to share a shocking story out of Minnesota with you today. In fact, both of the stories that I'm going to focus heavily on in today's episode come out of Minnesota. So I'm not really sure what is happening there, but it is a radical. But before I get to that, I want to share some good news related to something I talked about in last week's episode. So, thank you for joining me. I'm Travis Rusko. This is a Fairly Important Podcast, episode 16. So I want to start things off here with some really good news today, and that is the news that Pastor James Coates, who's a Canadian pastor, is out of jail. And if you didn't hear me talk about him in the previous episode, you might be thinking, well, why is he in jail? Did he club a seal pup? Did he rob a bank? No, he didn't. He was in jail because he opened his church. Let me say that again so that that can sink in for you. He was in jail because he opened his church. And of course, there's a little bit more to it than that. And some people think that this little bit of nuance makes it okay that he was in jail. But you see, he opened his church beyond 15% capacity. And in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, they were telling people they could only open their church at 15% capacity. So he sat in jail for 35 days. Now, he is still going to trial in May. There's an article here from the Gospel Coalition Canada, and I'll link it in the show notes, but it says, since the remaining charge against Pastor Coates involves meeting beyond capacity for worship, it will force the Alberta government to justify their decision to restrict worship. And so they're saying here in the article that it's actually a good thing because they're going to have to go to court, the government, they're going to have to go to court, and they're going to have to explain, this is why we put a pastor in jail for 35 days. They also note here in the article that there were other churches that also violated the health guidelines after Pastor Coates' arrest without similar applications of the law against them. So they're saying here that the uneven application of the law suggests that Alberta law enforcement might have been attempting to make an example out of Pastor Coates. That should terrify you. That should terrify any person who loves the idea of freedom of religion, freedom of worship. And I know that the laws are different between the United States and Canada. Here in the United States, we have the First Amendment, and it's first for a reason, because it's fairly important. The idea that any government would want to make an example out of a pastor for opening his church is disgusting. He never should have been in jail in the first place. He never should have faced a fine. He shouldn't have spent a minute in jail, let alone 35 days. But that's the upside-down world that we live in. Here in the U.S., there have been scores of dangerous criminals released early because there were concerns that COVID would spread in the prison population. And I know that at least one of those prisoners, and I'm sure it's been more than one, but at least one of those prisoners who was released with 100 other prisoners from a particular facility in April of 2020 murdered somebody in Florida the day after he got out. Those people are being released from prison who belong in prison. And yet up in Alberta, Canada, they put James Coates behind bars for 35 days for opening his church at full capacity. But again, the good news is, even though this injustice happened to him, he is out. He is a free man. He's able to be with his wife and with his family. And that is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Now on to some things that aren't real. Well, they're not wonderful. There's no other way to say it, but we're going to have to cover these as well. Because talking about things brings attention to them. And then when the attention is brought to them, hopefully things can change. And so the first main story today comes out of Minnesota. Actually, both of the main stories, like I already said, come out of Minnesota because something is wrong there. Terribly, terribly wrong there. But this story is from the Daily Wire. And I read this on Thursday evening, originally, March 25th. The title, Minnesota's New Social Studies Curriculum Would Radicalize First Graders, Teach High Schoolers About the Evils of Whiteness, Capitalism, and Christianity. There's a lot here in this article that is just gross. And I encourage you to check out the whole thing. I will have a link to it in the show notes. But what this is I guess every 10 years, the curriculum goes up for a review statewide. And what I'm going to talk about here is coming directly from the Minnesota Department of Education. And the article talks about all kinds of insane ideology being dumped on these kids in Minnesota. And keep in mind, these are public schools. These are the schools that the taxpayers of Minnesota pay for. These are the schools that most parents in Minnesota will be sending their kids to. Side note, homeschooling is a fantastic idea. But here's one of the first little gems from this article. It says, according to a copy of the standards, the committee wants to begin social studies classes with a land acknowledgement. Now, you might not be aware of what those are. I've never heard of one before. Land acknowledgements tell students that they are learning on land that was conquered by Americans, though once belonged to Native Americans. Minnesota is the contemporary and ancestral home of the Anishinaabe and Dakota peoples. And social studies education on this land will acknowledge and honor their contemporary and historical voices. The draft reads. And so what you have here is more of the same, more of what we've heard for years now, is that America is evil. And I think to myself, I wonder if these kids even do the pledge at the beginning of the school day. Because I know that's controversial more and more in quote-unquote civilized society. But totally fine to tell kids that this is stolen land and essentially we don't even really have any business being here. And people get frustrated about this. And, you know, I'm not saying that everything that we have done in the history of our nation is good. There have been many evils that have happened in the history of our nation. But even Native Americans came here at one point in human history, and even Native Americans went to war with other tribes and conquered land of other tribes. And in fact, give me one example in human history where a country came about without one group of people conquering another group of people, without war. it's always about one group of people seeing another group of people, seeing their land, seeing their resources, and taking over. And do with that what you want, but that's the case on every continent and with every country on this planet. Couple more things from this article, because there's a lot here. Under the new standards, learning about social justice curriculum begins in the first grade. 6 and 7 year olds may be taught about systemic discrimination and how groups have fought against such discrimination. And this article talks about what different kids are supposed to be indoctrinated about in different grades. It says here, in fifth grade, students are asked to, quote, investigate how groups, example, women, religious groups, civil rights groups, indigenous peoples, LGBTQ, have advocated for access to greater rights. Fifth graders must also learn about the ongoing debate about renaming buildings following the death of George Floyd and the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement. Here's a cute little gem. Middle schoolers may soon be exposed to learning about racism in relation to the criminal justice system in Minnesota, the evils of capitalism, and social justice activism. The standards ask sixth graders to describe the goals, offenses, penalties, long-term consequences, and privacy concerns of Minnesota's juvenile justice system and evaluate the impact on Black, Indigenous, persons of color, or BIPOC communities. And here's one of those little parts about capitalism being evil. In seventh grade, students may be asked to describe how profit can be used as an incentive for people to exploit others or the environment. You know, kids are taught every day that capitalism is evil and it's all about greed. And when they're taught that, they are surrounded by the amazing benefits of capitalism, at least if they're here in the United States or in the Western world. They're taught that, especially now with COVID, through a computer screen brought to them by capitalism. They complain about it without really having any knowledge of it through their phone on social media apps created by capitalism. Free market capitalism is the greatest economic system that the world has ever known. Supply and demand, and this idea of a free exchange of goods. I have a skill or have an item that somebody desires. That person has something to give me in return for that skill or that item. And an exchange occurs between us that is mutually beneficial. I have the item and they value it. They have $10 and I value it. They value their $10 less than they value the item that I have. And I happen to value the item that I have less than their $10. An exchange occurs. And every single day, free market capitalism is happening around high school students and middle school students and college students. And every single person teaching them is telling them that it is the worst thing that has happened in human history, when it is actually the thing that has pulled billions of people out of poverty in the course of human history. Basically, for all of human history until about 100 years ago, every single person on this planet lived a subsistence lifestyle of abject poverty. But capitalism gives people the opportunity to rise up above that. And so again, it's saying here in seventh grade, students might be asked to describe how profit can be used as an incentive for people to exploit others or the environment. High school students undergo the most intense social justice indoctrination. At one point in the curriculum, freshmen are taught about the evils of whiteness, Christianity, and capitalism, and asked to question the country's founding documents. Just like many of the people who run our country do now, every day, day in and day out. According to the standards, ninth graders must describe the tactics used by the United States government to claim indigenous and Mexican land, including but not limited to an analysis of the ideology of manifest destiny and its relationship to whiteness, Christianity, and capitalism. Other lessons include an explanation on how systemic inequality created barriers to assessing credit, explain how race is a social construction used to oppress people of color, and learn to embrace gender ideologies. Students will develop a respectful awareness about how ideas and norms about gender have changed over time and how members of the LGBTQ plus community have responded to persecution or marginalization by building coalitions in order to promote gender equality slash equity. There's so much here. I'm skipping over portions of this article because there's a lot here. Ninth graders must also question why the United States founding documents included only the voices of white people. We can get mad about these things all we want. You can turn on the news, you can go on Twitter, you can go on Facebook, you can see things, you can get mad all you want. But being upset only does so much. You have to decide if you're going to do something. And I understand there's only so many hours in a day and there's only so many causes people can get involved in, but maybe you're a mom or a dad or a grandma or a grandpa or an aunt or an uncle, and you're hearing my voice right now and you're thinking, I got to do something about this. Get involved in your local school district. Go to PTA meetings. Run for the school board. Educate people about the views of people who are on the school board in your community or who may be running for the school board in your community. Again, I've got a free guide, 7 quick steps to stand up for your values today at fairlyimportant.com/7steps. It's free, as in $0. And it isn't rocket science, but it talks about how to get up off your butt and do things about things that matter to you. How to stand for issues that are important to you. fairlyimportant.com/7steps. We can get mad all we want, but maybe we can also do something. Okay, the other story here, also out of Minnesota, like I said. Good gravy, I feel like my blood pressure is through the roof right now. But I'm recording this at 11:20 p.m., and I am drinking coffee to try to continue going. Another story out of Minnesota, and this one is from The Blaze. Title of the story, Minnesota Theater Scraps Cinderella Production Fires Cast Because 98% Were White. I know that in our current cultural climate, you can't make comparisons like this because it's only okay to fire people for being white or being heterosexual or being a Christian or maybe for being an Orthodox Jew. But can you imagine the outrage across the country if the title of this article was Minnesota Theater Scraps Cinderella Production Fires Cast Because 98% Were Black, 98% Were Hispanic, 98% Were Asian? So essentially what happened here is there's this theater in Minnesota, and they had this production ready. It was going to take place later on this year. And on Monday of this previous week, Monday, March 22nd, they put out an announcement saying that they decided to cancel it. And it wasn't because they didn't have the talent that they were looking for. It wasn't because it wasn't because of anything other than the fact that there were just too many darn white people. And we all know how annoying white people are. I'm a white person, so I can attest to this. I know that I'm annoying. I know that there's people listening to my voice right now who may be annoyed by it. There's even times when I play the podcast back doing some editing and I hear my voice and I'm kind of annoyed. So I get it. The cool thing, the new thing, the good thing anymore in a world of critical race theory in a world of woke leftism, the cool thing and the okay thing to do is to be racist against white people. This isn't saying that there is no racism that exists in the world against black people or other minorities, because there is. But in this country, where people are taught that every aspect of our society is systemically racist, which is a lie, in this country, it's totally okay to be racist to white people and to fire white people because they're white. So they put out this announcement on Monday, and then on Tuesday, they put out a follow-up announcement to clarify things a little bit. And this is from the article on The Blaze. They're quoting the announcement here. It says, "Just to be clear, we believe unapologetically in the changes we're making. And we believe that all of our kind-hearted guests will follow us on this journey. We did not cancel Cinderella because of content. We are looking forward to bringing it to our stage in the future. But we as a company decided our original casting didn't go far enough in our commitment, and instead of waiting another full year to implement these important changes, we chose now." Artistic director Michael Brindisi told the Pioneer Press this week, "The decision was made after he took a look at the cast and realized, quote, it was 98% white. That doesn't work with what we're saying we're going to do," Brindisi added, noting that the theater had hired diversity consultant Kelly Foster Warder to help foster these moves. Funny thing about this, I don't know if you would call it funny, but they mentioned that in this article on The Blaze, they mentioned that the Daily Mail also did an article on this and found that it was probably going to be difficult to find a diverse cast in the town of Chanhassen, Minnesota, because 92.5% of the people in Chanhassen are white. Less than 3% of the residents are Hispanic, while 1.1% are black. And this is where our attempts at equity, which is completely different than equality, this is where our attempts at equity brings about a society where people are being discriminated against. You create a society where people literally get fired because of the color of their skin. When you try to have these quotas over how many white people you're going to have, how many black people you have, how many LGBTQIA2S plus people you're going to have, it is no longer a matter of who's the best fit for the job. It's a matter of how many groups of people that we self-segregate can we have within our organization? Do we have a checkmark for the Asian people? Do we have a checkmark for the non-binary people? And so, again, in this attempt at equity, equality actually goes out the window. So if that's what Chanhassen Dinner Theater was intending to do, if that's what their artistic director, Michael Brindisi, intended to do, you did it. If that was the goal of their diversity consultant, Kelly Foster Warder, you did it. Congratulations. You discriminated against people specifically because of the color of their skin. Okay, I've talked about this website before, and I'm going to talk about it again because it's really good. Fiverr.com. That's F-I-V-E-R-R. Fiverr is filled with freelancers. Any freelancer you need for anything that you need done that's legal. If you need a website made, if you need graphic design done, if you need a logo, if you need a virtual assistant who can help take some things off your plate, check out fairlyimportant.com/Fiverr, F-I-V-E-R-R. That's an affiliate link. I earn a commission for sending you there, but I'm sending you there because I've used Fiverr a few times for my own projects and I've recommended them to people because their prices are great. And I've always been really happy with the quality of the work I've got from my freelancers on there. and they're really easy to use. I get a small commission for sending you there, but that's at no extra cost to you. So you help out the show, and you get something that you need. FairlyImportant.com/FIVERR. Back to the show. Okay, I have one more story I want to share real quick before we get going today. And by real quick, I mean, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes here. I know I already shared the good news about Pastor Coates. And of course, he's not totally out of the woods yet. He's got this trial he's facing, and I'm sure that the government there will continue to try to make things difficult for him and for his church. But there's another man I want to talk to you about who is going through quite a storm right now. And unfortunately, it's not the first time that he's faced something like this. So this poor guy, he is a baker in Colorado. And if you follow these kind of things, you've probably heard of him before. His name is Jack Phillips. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because in 2017, I think it was 2017, he was sued for refusing to bake a custom wedding cake for a same-sex couple. Actually, that was in 2012. Sorry. And the case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and he actually won that case in a 7-2 victory in 2018. And again, hey, welcome to the United States. This is how it goes. We have religious freedom. Also, when you consider the fact that this is art, that this is something he is creating, this man has the freedom to create it or to not create it. Well, there is now a transgender activist who is an attorney, and I'm looking at this story on discern.com right now, D-I-S-R-N. And the activist attorney is Autumn Scardina, a biological male who identifies as a woman. And Autumn tried to order a birthday cake to celebrate a gender transition on the same day in 2017 that the Supreme Court agreed to hear Jack Phillips' previous case. The cake was ordered to be blue on the outside and pink on the inside to celebrate Scardina's gender transition. I don't understand how this is still happening in the United States. I mean, I suppose I understand in the sense that there's always going to be people that are out to cause problems. There's always going to be people like Autumn Scardina who just want to screw around with people's lives. But most people, I would think, would go to another baker. That is the beauty of the free market. Okay, if you have a baker that has a certain religious conviction, you go to them and you say, hey, will you make this cake for our gay wedding? Will you make this cake celebrating a gender transition? And if that baker says, you know, I'm sorry, that's against my beliefs, any reasonable human being would say, oh, okay, I understand. I guess I need to find another baker. But in our current cultural climate, that's not what happens. The baker ends up being turned into an evil villain. And somehow it's not evil for the gay couple or the transgender attorney that's trying to force him against his will to bake a cake for a ceremony or for a celebration that he doesn't believe in, that he doesn't condone. Now, if you are a liberal, let me ask you, what if a baker is an animal rights activist and a hunting lodge comes to them, and you're gonna say, okay, this is ridiculous, but I'm being dead serious here, because this would matter to some bakers who are animal rights activists. But what if a baker is an animal rights activist and a hunting lodge comes to them and kind of has a design scribbled out on a piece of paper? It's tasteful, but they want them to make a cake that has mounted animal heads on it. And it's tasteful, but it looks like a hunting lodge, and maybe there's a fireplace roaring on the cake, and there's like a moose head and a deer head and a giraffe head or something. I don't know. If the animal rights activist baker doesn't feel great making that cake and says, you know, I'm sorry, but I really love animals and I'm not going to make that cake for you. Should the hunting lodge sue that baker? No, leave the baker alone and go find somebody else to make your cake. But it isn't about cakes. It is about the idea that conservatives need to be silenced. They need to be shut down. Alliance Defending Freedom has been representing Jack Phillips. He's the owner of Masterpiece Cake Shop. And they've been defending him throughout this. And here in the Discern article towards the end, his attorney says, 8 years is a long time to live under the weight of constant litigation that threatens the business you built and the people you love. And during his first case, Jack lost a big part of his business and more than half of his employees. Okay, that is what happened in this man's previous legal battle. And now you have a radical activist attorney coming after him again, trying to destroy what does remain of his business. So pray for Jack Phillips and pray for sanity in our society. I don't get it. It's not like a transgender person came into his bakery and said, hey, can I buy a cake? Or hey, can I buy some cupcakes? Or hey, can I buy cookies or whatever? And he said, no, get out of here. You're transgender. I don't want to serve you. We don't serve your kind around here. A person came in asking Jack Phillips to use his creative abilities, the abilities that God gave him, by the way, to create something that stood in direct opposition to Jack Phillips' religious beliefs. And if you've ever seen this guy on the news, he's really soft-spoken. He has a calm demeanor. He's a baker. He wants to bake cakes and he wants to be left alone, I'm sure. But that is not how things go anymore. So pray for Jack Phillips. Pray for the people that work at Masterpiece Cake Shop. And by the way, Alliance Defending Freedom, they are the nonprofit legal organization that is supporting Jack Phillips and that has been supporting him throughout this whole ordeal. They're doing amazing work. And if you want to help them out, go to adflegal.org/donate. That's A-D as in defending, F as in freedom, legal.org/donate. That can help them support Jack Phillips. That can help them support many, many important causes that they're part of. Because it's important to stand up for people that a lot of the world will refuse to stand for. Thanks so much for stopping by. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you stop by again really soon. God bless. Hey, I bet you thought I was gone, but I'm not, and apparently neither are you. If you don't mind, I'd love for you to do me a quick favor. Hit the subscribe or follow button in whatever podcast app you're using right now. I'll also ask you to review the show. If you do a written review, I might even read it on an upcoming episode. You can do that on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, CastBox, Podcast Addict, or Podchaser, or at fairlyimportant.com/lovethepodcast. Okay, I'm going to go for real now. You can go too.